If you love the History Extra podcast, make sure you follow us to keep up to date and get all the latest episodes. Thanks for your support, and I do hope you enjoy this episode.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There are all of these reports about him being an extraordinary magnetic presence on stage, you know, disappearing into role, fear, fury, passion. All of these words keep coming up in reports of him in the theatre.
That was Andrew Dixon talking about the Shakespearean actor Richard Burbage.
Listening to the History Extra podcast from BBC History Magazine. We're the UK's best-selling history magazine, available in print and several digital formats all over the world. Find out more at historyextra.com/subscribe or look out for us in your digital newsstand or app store.
Hello and welcome to the History Extra podcast. I'm Rob Attar, the editor of BBC History Magazine. On Sunday, the 15th of April, BBC Radio 3 will be airing a documentary entitled Exit Burbage, which explores the life of the great Shakespearean actor Richard Burbage, but inquires why he's almost been forgotten by history. The documentary is presented by the journalist and author Andrew Dixon, and he caught up with our deputy editor Charlotte Hodgman a little while back to share Burbage's fascinating story.
Is it somebody that you were familiar with before the Radio 3 programme?
Well, I think, to be honest, I'd seen Burbage's name because you see Burbage's name in lots of places. I wrote a guidebook to Shakespeare. The first version of that came out about 15 years ago. And I was writing about Shakespeare and Shakespearean stage history. And I'd seen this name of this actor, Richard Burbage. But I'd never actually sort of pieced together who he was. You know, you see names like Will Kemp and Robert Armin, other members of Shakespeare's company, Burbage hadn't really jumped out. And it actually wasn't until I was talking to a BBC radio producer about him, and I suddenly thought, yes, gosh, he is so interesting, isn't he? Because not only is he one of the actors in Shakespeare's company, he's kind of the actor. You know, he's the first guy, we think, who played Hamlet, who played Lear, Othello, Macbeth, Pericles, Richard III, Henry V. All of these kind of great Shakespearean roles were played by this one guy. And when you sort of start putting that together and you think, okay, well, what did that look like, you know, year on year through the course of his career? And you think, gosh, that's absolutely fascinating. And also, why haven't I really clocked him? Why didn't I really know that much about him? Why don't we know that much about him? And that's really how the programme began, I suppose. We wanted to do a kind of detective story, in a sense, try and track him down and work out who he was and how on earth he did what he seems to have done.
Yeah. I mean, so what have you found out about him?
Well, the interesting thing is that in terms of kind of documentary evidence, we know the basics. We know that he was born in London in 1568. So that's sort of 4 years after Shakespeare. We also know that he grew up in a theatre family. Richard's father, James Burbage, was actually a joiner from Bromley in Kent, who'd basically run away to join the circus, essentially. He decided, obviously, at some point that he was interested in acting. He'd started acting himself. He set up an acting company. And then the interesting thing about James Burbage is that he actually builds the very first theatre, the first purpose-built theatre in the Elizabethan period, which is simply called the Theatre, and it's in Shoreditch in East London. And Richard kind of grew up in this household. So his elder brother Cuthbert was, we think, a theatre manager, but Richard was the kind of star of the family, basically, and was probably on stage by his teens. And then that's when we start sort of seeing this link between Shakespeare and Burbage. In a sense that I think the fascinating thing is probably that the Burbage family was the link that brought Shakespeare to London. It's possible that he first encountered James Burbage when he was acting on tour in Stratford-upon-Avon. And, you know, no one is exactly sure because there isn't the evidence. But my hunch is that probably they encountered each other in Stratford. And Shakespeare is obviously sort of aspiring writer, an actor himself. And perhaps the Burbage family were the link that first enabled him to move to London and to start writing for the theatre. So essentially what happens is the Burbages give him the theatre in Shoreditch, allow him to write, to produce plays, to be part of the acting company. And that's how you get this astonishing collaboration between Shakespeare and Richard Burbage, which begins probably in the late 1580s, 1590s. I mean, in terms of the other facts about Burbage's life, there isn't very much. We know that he married a woman called Winifred. They had 8 children. Rather sadly, only one of those children survived beyond childhood, not very untypical for the time. We know that he died. We know that he was extremely famous when he died. But that's kind of it, really. So what we were doing was just trying to chase the paper trail and find out as much about Burbage as we possibly could, whilst also, I guess, trying to get at, I think, what is the interesting stuff, which is how he and Shakespeare worked together, you know, how playwright and how actor bounced off each other, generated ideas, how the roles that Shakespeare wrote for Burbage developed, you know, what kind of qualities did he have as an actor? What might it have been like to be in the theatre watching him? And that's what we were trying to get to.
I mean, it seems incredible that somebody who was proclaimed that the greatest actor England had ever seen by the time of his death has now largely been forgotten. I mean, why do you think that's the case?
Yeah, it's so striking, isn't it? I mean, when Burbage died in 1619, so 3 years after Shakespeare, it was a national event. You know, there were poems about it. People were writing about it in letters. Some people said that they couldn't bear to go to the theatre ever again because the greatest actor of all time had ever died. I think, in a sense, it's because we don't really remember actors, do we? In a way, from history, you know. There's not film or TV, obviously, in this period. You don't have records of their performances. The kind of documentary records are very scanty for performers at this time. And I think really until the kind of 19th or 20th centuries, it's only then that people really start writing about the art of acting. But I guess it's, in a way, what I wanted to do in this program and working with the producer Penny Murphy to try and do is, as it were, tell the other side of the story. You know, we all know all about Shakespeare and, you know, not what he had for breakfast every day, but his life has been covered in such detail, so many different biographies of him. But actually, in a sense, Burbage's kind of involvement in working on those plays, developing those scripts, I think is the really interesting thing. You know, Shakespeare was obviously writing for him, obviously had his particular talents as a performer in mind, was thinking about his capabilities. And the example I've kind of always thought of when working on this program, it's a bit like a composer and a great musician, that Shakespeare must have looked at Burbage, looked at his
his skills, his magnetic presence on stage, and thought, okay, well, what can I do with this? How can I write? What kind of characters can I create? And when you start placing together these characters, you think about the big roles that Burbage played, Hamlet, Lear, Richard III, you know, you do get continuities. You know, it's not, I don't think, an accident that all of those characters goes mad, that they have kind of, you know, major sort of transformations, kind of psychological breakdowns. Clearly, Burbage was very, very expert at doing that. We also know that he must have had an absolutely prodigious memory, because as far as we can tell, in the Elizabethan period, companies like Shakespeare's Company were performing 30-odd plays a year. Maybe half of those would have been new. So you think about the kind of work rate, not only going on stage as Hamlet in the afternoon in these performances in the Elizabethan period, but memorizing new plays, doing work at court, dealing with patrons, as well as also being very involved in the business of the company, the actual kind of day-to-day business of keeping the company running, you know, keeping the building, the Globe in good repair, all of that kind of sort of business side of things Burbage was very, very heavily involved in. I mean, there's a line that stuck with me, one of his very few biographers, a woman called Mary Edmund, who wrote a piece about him in the Oxford Dictionary of National Biography. And she says, you know, Burbage dies at 50, and he did well to get that far. he must have been working so hard. It must have been a life of absolutely constant action and movement and energy. And that's the thing. He must have just had so much going on to do all this.
We don't always realise just how much our negative thoughts and experiences stick with us and weigh us down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mum does. Or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger. Talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/historyextra today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/historyextra.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I mean, Shakespeare was famously an actor as well as a playwright. Do you think that maybe Burbage was writing plays or helping Shakespeare with his works at all?
I mean, that's the tantalising question. You know, is it a collaboration? Are the two of them kind of actually writing these plays together? I mean, the honest answer is that there's just no way of knowing. You know, we don't have any evidence. We have very, very little evidence even about how Shakespeare wrote his plays. You know, we know that he worked with sources. We know he could sort of piece together some of the ways in which these plays perhaps came into being. But we don't know how he wrote them. You know, my hunch is, though, that Shakespeare, and people don't, I think, appreciate this enough, is that he was a collaborator as much as a playwright. You know, we have this rather post-romantic idea of Shakespeare sort of sitting in his garret, you know, working on Hamlet or King Lear, and then handing the plays, handing the scripts over to the actors, and that's the way that it goes. Actually, my hunch is it would have been a much more collaborative process, that Shakespeare would have been working on these scripts, certainly, but they would have changed in rehearsal and in performance. You know, the company were very, very used to adapting these scripts as they went along, responding to particular contexts or environments. Suddenly, you know, you've got a noble in the audience. Maybe you should make some reference to that. The script gets changed. I mean, the sheer pace of work suggests that actually they would have been adapting these plays as they went along. You know, these plays that we call Shakespeare's, whether they were totally Shakespeare's plays and only Shakespeare's plays, I think is probably quite unlikely in some sense. And as much as Shakespeare would have been responding to actors like Burbage and thinking about what they could do, what they're good at, you know, what will suit them in terms of roles and characters, they must also have been feeding ideas back, saying, "Oh, I'm not quite sure this works. Can we make that scene a little bit shorter? It feels a bit too long to me." You know, there's one fascinating thing that came up in making the program, that you notice, again, lots of these big roles that Burbage played, Hamlet, Lear, Othello even. And the interesting thing is that the lead role, the hero, disappears for quite a lot of the second half of the action. You know, you think about Hamlet goes off to England, is sent there by Claudius. You think about Lear, and he sort of disappears because he has his big mad scene, and then he disappears for several scenes. You don't see him on stage. And apparently some actors that we were talking to at the American Shakespeare Center in Stanton in Virginia, they call this the Burbage break, because there's this sort of sense of, actually, well, those first, you know, five or six scenes, particularly in a play like King Lear, are exhausting. You know, you're almost never off stage. You've got an enormous amount to do. It requires such energy. And perhaps, you know, Burbage is in his 40s by the time he's playing these roles. Maybe he just needs to have a bit of a sit down, have a cup of tea backstage and just take a breath and take a pause. And Shakespeare must have written that in, you know, knowing that perhaps he put so much of himself into these roles. And there are all of these reports about him being an extraordinary magnetic presence on stage, you know, disappearing into role, fear, fury, passion, all of these words keep coming up in reports of him in the theatre. And maybe he just needed to just take a breath and come back. And I think that's just so interesting, the way in which, you know, the life of one man and the experience of one man actually gets kind of embedded in these plays. So, yeah, I mean, to answer your question, absolutely. I think we need to think of, you know, less the idea of Shakespeare as a kind of sole writer working on his own, and much more of him as a collaborator working in a company, developing these scripts together, altering them as they went along. That would have absolutely been part of his working process.
And what do we know of his relationship with Shakespeare? I mean, do you get the sense from your research that they had some sort of friendship, you know, that they were close?
Yes, it comes through very strongly, the sense of friendship, not just, you know, professional colleagues, but actual friends. There are a few sort of hints there. I mean, obviously, you think about, I mean, they must have been able to get on if Shakespeare wrote all of these plays for him and Burbage was in the company. But I think partly, yes, that link, possible link back to Stratford and the idea that Shakespeare, there's a story that Shakespeare, when he first moved to London, lived in Shoreditch, and Shoreditch was where the Burbage family lived. You know, my hunch is that probably he perhaps lived with the Burbages for a time, or certainly they kind of helped bring him to London and encouraged him in his writing. There are also these tantalizing little scattered fragments as well. We know that one of Richard's and Winifred's children was called Juliet. You know, that one of the daughters is called Juliet. She died very young, but you think, okay, well, of course, you know, what play had Burbage been in 5 years before? It was Romeo and Juliet. And indeed, their one surviving son was called William. The one boy who survived was called William, and he was born quite soon after Shakespeare's death. So that must have been surely a tribute to their relationship. We know from Shakespeare's side that in his will, one of the very few friends, he describes them as friends, that he gives money to in his will. One of them is Burbage. The other two are Hemmings and Condell, the fellow actors who end up being the guys who create the first folio. So clearly there was an intimacy there. I think that, you know, what we have to sort of understand about the way that acting companies worked in the Elizabethan period was that they were kind of family businesses, really. I mean, the Burbages were running the Lord Chamberlain's men, later the King's men. They owned a theatre. They were heavily involved in all of the work of the company. And I think once you're in that company, you know, not only is it a sort of business arrangement that you're kind of all shareholders in this enterprise, but you are kind of like family members. You're working together the entire time, you know, you're spending so much of your life with each other. I get a real sense of intimacy actually between Burbage and Shakespeare. It's very striking. We were at the Folger Library in Washington, D.C., doing some research for the program. And one of the things about the Folger Library is they have this enormous collection of Shakespeare first folios. They've got the world's largest collection, 82 of the things. It's completely crazy. And we looked at one of the copies when we were there. And you open it up, of course, and you see on the almost the first page of the volume, the list of principal actors in these plays. And who are the first two names in the list? It's William Shakespeare and Richard Burbage, you know, that they're together. And so I do get a real sense that, it wasn't just a professional relationship. There must have been a friendship there.
And, I mean, how were actors generally seen during this period? I mean, you've mentioned that he would have been very well known. Was it a respected profession?
No, it wasn't at all, really. I mean, at least from the official point of view. The Elizabethan government took a very dim view of actors, generally speaking. There's a very famous statute which calls them rogues and vagabonds. They are, I guess, you know, much more sort of marginal than we'd think of in terms of actors these days. They have a sort of slightly sort of liminal status in society. So, yeah, you could be thrown in prison if you're an actor and you don't have the protection of a powerful patron. At the same time, obviously, theatre was enormously popular in Elizabethan London. You know, there's these statistics that you know, perhaps a tenth of the population saw theatre. It's the kind of mass media of its day. But at the same time, the authorities don't like theatre. They're continually trying to close the theatres down for being incitements to sedition and plague. You know, the theatres have to be constructed outside the City of London in the so-called Liberties, so in Shoreditch and then later in Southwark. So I think there's a sort of sense that actors are sort of not quite know people, but sort of on the edges somehow, on the fringes. You know, they're very, very famous and people are, you know, absolutely know who these people are. People would have known who Burbage was. At the same time, they're not quite fully respectable members of society. And this, of course, is very much like Shakespeare as well. We know that Shakespeare acquired a coat of arms at great expense, which a lot of people seem to have mocked him for, seem to have been sort of rather ridiculous thing for a pretty humbly born playwright from the sticks to want to get a coat of arms and become a gentleman. But of course, the Burbage family do exactly the same thing. They're trying to enter polite society and perhaps not quite making it. You know, there's a sort of sense that, you know, they're trying to establish themselves, but also it's regarded as a slightly sort of dangerous, dodgy, liminal profession. So they're absolutely on the margins of that. You know, when you're looking for clues about who Burbage was and how he operated, you know, I guess one of the things you do is you talk to modern actors about how they feel about the roles that he's played. And we talked to Simon Russell Beale and to Catherine Hunter, two extremely eminent Shakespeareans who between them have played many of the roles that Burbage seems to have originated. And that was so interesting talking to them and getting their perspective on these roles. And the thing that Catherine Hunter said was when we, you know, sort of were talking about the demands of playing Lear as well as Hamlet and Othello, Macbeth, all of these great roles in a very, very short period of time, she just said, wow, you know, I can't imagine doing that. The sheer amount of energy he must have had, you know, to go on stage in these characters, to go to these dark and difficult psychological places, let alone do all the other stuff that he he had to do off stage. He must have been a remarkable performer. And some of Russell Beale was also very struck by that sort of sense of energy that Burbage must have had. But he also said this interesting thing that actually, even though these days we perhaps don't know Burbage's name and we should, and, you know, as far as we're aware, he didn't write any plays. But in a sense, the things that he created do survive. You know, he did work with Shakespeare on these plays, you know. Ben Jonson wrote for him, Marston wrote for him, all of these great playwrights. And so in a sense, his monument is that work. You know, those scripts do survive. And every time that someone plays Hamlet or plays King Lear, perhaps a little bit of Burbage does survive. You know, there's a sense that actually, you know, a bit of him is in the theatre there somehow. And I don't know, I find that quite a nice thought.
That was Andrew Dixon. And as I mentioned earlier, his documentary, Exit Burbage, is airing on BBC Radio 3 this Sunday, the 15th of April, at 6:45 p.m. And Andrew has also written a piece for the magazine about Burbage, which will appear in our May issue that goes on sale next week. In the meantime, you can still get hold of our April edition, which includes pieces about Alexander Hamilton, Martin Luther King, the RAF in World War II, and a whole lot more. Look out for it in all good retailers and on many digital editions. Okay, so that's about all for today, but please do listen in on Monday for more from the world of history.
Thanks for listening to this History Extra podcast, which was produced by Jack Fletcher. Do let us know what you think about this episode by emailing podcast@historyextra.com, and we might read out your messages in future editions. Alternatively, why not keep in touch via Twitter or Facebook, where you'll find us at History Extra. For more great history content, don't forget to visit our website, historyextra.com, which is full of history articles, quizzes, image galleries, and more. Plus, it's where you can download hundreds of previous episodes of this podcast.